your circle of acquaintances, only you don't know it yet. Janet writes,
"He and I had known each other casually for years, and with an unfortunate history. I'd once written a newspaper piece harshly criticizing one of the policies of the small business he was running at the time. So when I saw him on the street, we'd say a fairly stiff hello and part with a slight sense of relief. However, when I answered the personal ad from a man who described me quite precisely in his list of desired characteristics, I didn't know it was him. It took several rounds of correspondence before we each began to figure out who the other one was. And then all our mutual friends started getting phone calls from each of us asking about the other one. He was in a relationship with one of Dossie's roommates for several years. That's how close the connection actually was once we figured it out. We'd already fallen half in love just through email correspondence. Our first date was for Thai food and a long walk around one of Oakland's nicest neighborhoods. We had some negotiating to do around the whole issue of Polly. Some of his previous partners had been pretty good at the slut part, but not so good at the ethical part. But he was willing to at least try. He moved in a year or so later, and we got married a few months after that. As of this writing, we're approaching our third wedding anniversary and our fifth anniversary as a couple.
Chapter 18. Couples. Sluts relate in as many combinations and styles as you can possibly imagine, and more. Is there a typology of relationships that could possibly include every wonderful possibility? Obviously not. We believe that every relationship is unique unto itself, and thus even an attempt to think in types and forms is not going to express the essential truths of what happens when we love people. Here is one particular and fairly unusual relationship we cherish. Your authors have been lovers, co-authors, and best friends for 16 years, and we have never lived together. We have both lived with other partners during those 16 years and have both been single together for only a brief time. Our relationship is a treasure, and no other partner gets to object. We've been doing this for a long time, and we do not intend to stop. Of course, if we wanted to live together, we probably would have by now, so we are also no threat to any life partner. As long as you don't get threatened by reading in extensive detail about your partner's sexual adventures with her co-author, this is a problem only a few of you will ever face. It is nothing short of a miracle to us that our partnering has been so fruitful and so serene and so intimate and so explorative over all this time. We both agree that to live together would run a terrible risk of spoiling a good thing. Everybody ought to have a co-author. But even if you don't write, you might find yourself making connections that remind you of some of the possibilities we will discuss here. While all connections can be guided by the basic principles we've discussed in earlier chapters, new skills and concepts may get developed by brilliant sluts who want to explore the rewards and challenges of any particular lifestyle. In this chapter, we will discuss some of the many ways of exploring open sexual lifestyles and making your connections sustainable. Even if it doesn't seem like what you want has much in common with any of these ways of partnering, we suggest reading the whole chapter. There are ideas for all of us in the experiences of any one of us, and sometimes a voice from somewhere else can give us just the piece our puzzle was looking for. We all grew up in a world in which there was assumed to be nothing between emotionless sport fucking and committed long-term marriage-type relationships, leaving the vast territory in between open to discovery by relationship pioneers of all stripes, including ourselves. What interesting ways of relating to people might we, and you, find between these two poles? When we include all of our connections in our picture of relationship, we expand the definition of what a relationship can be. Each relationship seeks its own level when we let it. Operating on this principle, we can welcome each of our partners for precisely who they are. We don't need them to be anybody else or to bring us any particular resources or skills. If you don't want to play tennis with me, I'll ask somebody else. And if you don't want to play bondage games with me, again, somebody else will. Our relationship will not be less for it. What we share is valuable for what we share, period. We like to be easygoing about sex, but what people mean by casual sex is perhaps too dismissive. Casual sex sounds like we are supposed to be distant. Don't get too close, don't expect too much, avoid any expression of intimacy or vulnerability. We are now hearing people refer to certain of their lovers as friends with benefits. A euphemism, perhaps, but an interesting concept. Why shouldn't we share sex with our friends, making sex a natural part of the love and honor and faithfulness and open-heartedness that we already share with friends? We have learned the most and had the most fun and made the most wonderful rich connections when we have welcomed each new person into our lives just as they are, without trying to force them into the picture that's labeled relationship in our brains. This has been true whether we've been single, coupled, part of a group family, or engaged in any one of the myriad other ways of relating that creative and loving sluts can devise. Couplings. We hear too often of folks who delight in a joyously slutty lifestyle until they fall in love. Then, perhaps prodded by cultural messages that love must equal marriage, must equal monogamy, they dive into an attempt at a conventional lifestyle, often with disastrous consequences. At least one of your authors, you can insert Janet's rueful grin here, has proven herself not immune to this kind of programming. There is no reason why wedding bells, or the equivalent thereof, need to break up that old gang of yours. Many sluts find it possible to combine the committed stability of a life partnership with the manifold pleasures of sex and intimacy with others. However, there is no question that being a slut within a committed relationship has some special challenges. So much of our cultural baggage tells us that commitment equals ownership. That, as the old bitter joke has it, a ring around the finger equals a ring through the nose. Even people who know better often find, sometimes to their surprise, that their expectations of a committed relationship may include the right to control many aspects of their partner's lives. Well, we're going to write here about couples for the sake of clarity. All the principles apply equally to threesomes, foursomes, and moresomes. Relationships take their own shape, but the best ones tend to share some basic principles: good boundaries, mindfulness, and a mutual desire for the well-being of everyone involved. As you can probably guess, we don't much like the idea that a relationship commitment specifies anybody's right to anything beyond mutual respect and caring for each other. Yet once you divorce romantic love from the concept of ownership, what happens? One woman we know, who had never been in an open relationship before, was startled to find that many of her old habits had become irrelevant. Why should I bother to look for stray hairs on the pillow, trying to sniff out any trace of infidelity, when I know that if he has sex with someone else, he'll simply tell me about it? Yet there are still issues of boundaries, of responsibility, of courtesy, that complement ownership and promote sustainability, which must be dealt with. So, how do sluts in love build a life together? Our friends Ruth and Edward remember, "We had a monogamous relationship for about 16 years, then opened it up and started interacting with other people. Now we're trying to figure out what we're comfortable doing with other people and what we want to reserve for our own relationship. Sometimes, the only way to locate the boundary of our comfort zone is to cross it and feel the discomfort. We try to take small steps so that the pain is minimal. We're definitely committed to each other and are each willing to stop doing things that the other finds threatening. Mostly, you take care of your own stuff, recognize and protect your boundaries, and make agreements to help yourself and your partner feel safe. But we've already talked about that. Here are some special problems that may come up for partnered sluts. We've said before that each relationship seeks its own level. For some relationships, that's a life partnership, which may include sharing living space, possessions, and so on. Others may take other forms, occasional dates, friendships, ongoing romantic commitments, and so on. Yet many folks find that they've gotten into a habit of letting their relationships slide inexorably into life partnership, without much thought or intent on their part. Well-meaning friends and acquaintances may aid in this process by assuming that you and your friend are a couple before you've ever decided to become one. In addition, many people get coupled by accident, by virtue of an unplanned pregnancy, an eviction romance where one partner loses a housing situation and moves in with the other, or simple convenience. Janet remembers. In my freshman year of college, I met a guy I liked a lot, quiet and shy. But when he said anything, I really liked what he had to say. Finn and I wound up going out together a couple of times and having sex a few times. When school ended, we wrote to each other over the summer. Then fall came, and I began looking around for a place to live outside the dorms. The only room I could find was a double-sized room that I could afford only if I shared it with someone. So I called Finn and proposed that we share it, putting up a partition across the middle and sleeping on separate mattresses, and he agreed. The first night there, Finn had already gotten himself a mattress, and I hadn't yet, so I shared his. Somehow we never did get around to getting another mattress. We wound up living together for a couple of years, then getting married. That missing mattress led to a 15-year marriage and a couple of kids. While we're all for coupledom for people who choose it, we like to see folks make their choices a bit more mindfully than this. We suggest that before you let yourself slide into something that you don't really want, you do some serious thinking and talking, alone and together, about what is the best form for this particular relationship. Talk to each other about what love means to you and how you fit into each other's lives. You may discover that while you enjoy one another's company and have fabulous sex, your habits regarding housing, money, possessions, and so on are wildly incompatible. In such a situation, you could do what generations of people have done. Move in together and spend years trying to change one another, getting frustrated and resentful in the process. Or you could reconsider some of the implicit assumptions you have brought to the relationship. Do you have to live together? Why? Why not instead enjoy your friend for the things you like about him and find someone else with whom to share the other things? Slutthood means, among other things, that you don't have to depend on any one person to fulfill all your desires. If you know that you're a person who tends to slide into coupledom, we suggest spending some serious time trying to figure out why you've fallen into this pattern and what you hope to get out of being part of a couple. It's a very good idea for everyone to learn to live single, to figure out how to get your needs met without being partnered, so you don't find yourself seeking a partner to fill needs that you ought to fill yourself. You might also consider experimenting with some relationships unlike those you've tried in the past. Instead of looking for Mr. or Ms. Right, try dating some people you like and trust, but don't necessarily love. Or maybe love in a quieter way than chills running up your spine. In this, as in just about everything else we've told you in this book, the key is to build your own sense of internal security. If you like yourself, love yourself, and take care of yourself, your other relationships can arrange themselves around you as perfectly as crystal. We hope that if and when you get coupled, you do it on purpose. A few thoughts about marriage. One of the questions facing coupled sluts is the issue of whether to enter into the special, legally sanctioned partnership called marriage. In an increasing number of states and countries, even being in a same-sex relationship no longer exempts you from having to address this question. Same-sex marriage has been legally sanctioned in several states in the United States, in Canada, and in an increasing number of countries in Europe and elsewhere, and we utterly approve. Your authors, however, think it is very important that everyone look very closely at what apples we are buying when we reach out for the marriage rights piece of the American pie. Some of those apples have worms. Marriage as it now stands is the inevitable outcome of government imposing its standards on personal relationships, legislating a one-size-fits-all prescription detailing how people in sexual or domestic relationships ought to run their lives. Here in California, for example, we have community property laws, which means that whatever income or debt either spouse creates during the marriage belongs to both spouses. We know a woman whose soon-to-be ex-husband deliberately threw them into bankruptcy because she was planning to leave. Other states have laws just as arbitrary. In some places, if you live together for 7 years, you're married whether or not you want to be, by what is called, with startling narrow-mindedness, common law. Marriage is, we're told, a sacrament, a loving ritual where your faith and your community bless your union. Why, then, is our government, the one that says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, requiring us to get marriage licenses? If marriage is sacred, as we think it is, why is legal recognition of a relationship, along with privileges like health insurance and inheritance, restricted to those who are willing to shape their lives to conform to somebody else's design? If we ran the world, we would abolish marriage as a legal concept, allowing people to enter into contract relationships as allowed by the perfectly adequate laws that already govern other forms of legal partnership. Sample contracts could be provided by institutions, attorneys, churches, publishers, and support networks. Those who wish to perform marriage as a sacrament could do so under the auspices of whatever religious or social institution felt like a good fit for them. Under such a system, no agreement would be taken for granted. Sexual exclusivity, money sharing, inheritance, and all the other issues currently covered by inflexible marriage laws could be consciously chosen. We really like conscious choices. There is, of course, always a need for laws about the basic responsibilities adults have for children and other dependents. Tax breaks and other support should still be available to those caring for children and dependent elders who really need them. It's sort of like supporting public education. We have a hard time imagining a better use for our tax dollars than meeting the needs of the disabled, the aging, and our next generation. Love is a wonderful thing, and we think it would be even more wonderful if we all acted like responsible adults and entered into thoughtful arrangements about the physical and financial foundations of our lives. If we really took care of business instead of letting a pro forma piece of paper dictate our decisions for us, we would be much freer to love in whatever ways fit for us. Special challenges for couples. The commonest form of relationship in our culture and many others is the couple. Two people who have chosen to share intimacy, time, and perhaps space and possessions for now and the foreseeable future. While couplehood has a great deal to be said for it, it's a lot of work building a life and many hands make light work, it also offers some special challenges. The ideas in this section are written for two-person couples for the sake of simplicity, but most of them apply to threesomes and moresomes as well. Competition. One problem that sometimes arises between partners in sluttery is competition to be the most popular, a concern most of us have carried around in the bottom of our psyches since junior high school. Sometimes partners compete with each other to see who can score the most or the most attractive of conquests. An ugly picture. We cannot reiterate often enough. This is not a contest, this is not a race, and nobody is the prize. One strategy to cut through any feelings of competitiveness is to play matchmaker for each other, to invest yourself in your partner's sexual happiness as you do in your own. Some poly folk use the word compersion to describe the feeling of joy that comes from seeing your partner sexually happy with someone else. Remember the climax of The Big Chill, in which a woman character sets up her best friend with her husband so that her single friend could have a baby? Janet recalls meeting a new internet acquaintance for coffee and hearing her describe a pet sexual fantasy that was startlingly similar to Janet's then partner's. Janet set up a first date for her new acquaintance and her partner for later that week, and the two of them, with Janet joining in later on, went on to have a long and intense relationship. Dossie was once out on a date with a longtime lover of hers when she noticed an attractive person trying to catch her eye behind her date's back. She explained the situation to her date, who had a stroke of genius. He strode over to the young man in question and with great dignity announced, "My lady would like you to have her phone number." The young man looked terrified at the time, but he called the next morning. Dossi has made use of this strategy repeatedly since then and recommends it highly. They always call. Crushes. We have pointed out before that it is impossible for anyone to predict what depth of feeling may potentially exist in any sexual relationship. Many people new to open relationships try to limit outside sexual encounters to a casual recreational level to avoid the terrifying specter of seeing your partner in love with, or at least crushed out on, another. It is true that sometimes an outside relationship will threaten to become primary and supplant the existing partner. When this happens, everyone involved will feel horrible, especially the partner left behind. It really sucks to spend months or years struggling to own your jealousy and working hard on your fears of abandonment, only to be actually abandoned. But it is not possible to predict when or with whom a crush or any other deepening of feelings might happen, and most crushes pass in time and do not lead to breaking up. We certainly do not want to draw the boundaries of our agreement so tightly that we exclude everybody we like. There is no rule that will protect us from our own emotions, so we need to look beyond rules for solutions and for a sense of security. It can help to do a reality check on your fantasies and expectations. New relationships are often exciting because they are new, glowing with sexual arousal, and too untested to have uncovered the inevitable conflicts and disturbances that come with true intimacy over time. Every relationship has a honeymoon phase, and honeymoons do not last forever. Some people get addicted to the honeymoon, which you may hear called limerence or new relationship energy or NRE, and wind up flying from partner to partner, always imagining that the next partner will be the perfect one. Such unfortunates may never stay with anyone long enough to discover the deeper intimacy and profound security that comes with confronting, struggling with, and conquering the hard parts of intimacy together. Our friend Carol wisely notes,
"Sexual time is connected with intimate time for most of us. We come to depend on our partners for various kinds of emotional support. So we get into this pattern where we share all our hard, emotional, unsexy needs, all the work of living together, the sickness and health, richer and poorer stuff, with our life partner, and we're on our best behavior with our other partners. However, while being in a long-term relationship may involve trading away some of the juicy excitement of a brand new, unknown partner, the intimacy you get in return is valuable too. And you can't have that with a person you met 2 weeks ago. The trick is to find a way to manifest both possibilities, the intimacy of sharing and the heat of novelty in your own life."
The two-house couple. Not all couples live together. In recent years, it has become more common that couple-style partnerships, with all the closeness and longevity of couplehood, may nonetheless span two or more households. Dossi has extensive experience living this way. Sometimes this situation comes about by happenstance. School or career commitments, for example, may create geographical distance. Other couples have made a conscious choice, like one duo of our acquaintance who have maintained a 10-year bond by deciding about 3 years ago that they should live in separate dwellings. According to them, this saved their relationship. This life choice, we think, may well become even more common in the future. In times of financial security, sharing a house is no longer an economic necessity. Individuals in these couples may well be sharing a home with housemates, not necessarily wasting resources living alone. While some of them are polyamorous, others may be more or less monogamous. Arguments about who sleeps where become unnecessary when everybody has their own beds, but that's not the main reason these couples cite for living separately. Most of them simply feel that their relationships work better that way. Your authors, for instance, have been co-authors and lovers for 16 years and have never chosen to cohabit. We understand our relationship to be a magical gift that daily living might well destroy. If Dossie's inexplicable need for clean dishes didn't do the trick, Janet's devil-may-care attitude toward past due bills certainly would. We should not assume that such relationships represent a failure of intimacy or commitment. Rather than look for what is wrong, we might want to examine what is uniquely adaptive about these partnerings and what special skills or wisdom have developed from these new, assumption-challenging partnerships. Often such partners create rituals that maintain their connection when apart. Agreements about phone calls, ways of reaffirming love at comings together and leave-takings, keeping caught up with the news in each other's lives, marking one space or time as theirs, and another space or time as belonging to one or the other of them. Making this arrangement work requires some skills in scheduling and keeping time commitments. So differences between individuals in how they handle time and punctuality must be worked out. Differences in patterns of sexual desire can become problematic when opportunities don't happen every night. How do you respect your partner's space in this arrangement and feel secure in your own? Do you have to go home when you want a little distance? Or can you figure out a way to maintain your own space in a house that belongs to one of you? How much stuff do you get to keep there? People often have differences about how much staying in touch they are comfortable with when they are apart. Some people chat on the phone or text or instant message 2 or 3 times a day, while others would find that too distracting. All of the differences that couples need to manage still need to be managed when they live apart. Differences in gregariousness, tidiness, work patterns, focus on careers, how money gets handled, how often you have your mother over for dinner. No two people have identical patterns in any, much less all, of these items. And, sorry, living apart is not automatic protection against couple bed death. Nor is every time together automatically an occasion for sex, even though we often wish it were. We suspect that couples living separately will not be that different in their sexual lifestyles from those who live together. It can, however, make being together much more of a special occasion, so people tend to respect these times and be willing to invest a little effort into making them special. Many couples date for some period of time, perhaps even years, before moving in together. Are they then to be considered couples who lived separately by choice, or were they merely getting ready for the real stuff? Some couples, after dating for a very long time, may look at what living together would look like and decide that it would be a bad idea. Maybe all those differences would work out better in separate spaces. This decision can be hard to make in a society where living together is practically the definition of relationship. One question people often ask such couples is, then how do you know you're a couple? They know by how they feel about each other and, by extension, how much of their lives they are sharing. We'd like to see a world where all of our relationships are honored and valued, and where it is understood that a couple's love and their journey together is in no way less important just because it occurs in two houses rather than one. Relating to third parties. Your relationship with your lover's lovers brings up points of etiquette that Emily Post never dreamed of. One couple we talked to noted, it's important that we not be totally grossed out or disgusted by one another's lovers. Especially if it's going to be long-term, it helps if we can all be friends. Dossie notes, I was once in a relationship with a man who had a primary partner whom I had not met. I had asked to meet her, and she was considering whether she felt safe enough to do that. Their arrangement was that when Patrick had a date with me, Louisa would make a date with her other lover, and everybody would hopefully feel safe and taken care of. Unfortunately, Louisa's other lover frequently stood her up, and then Patrick would stand me up, which I began to find unacceptable. This was the first time I had asserted any right to consideration of me as the outside lover. We are so used to seeing the outsider as the homewrecker that we rarely think to protect that person's feelings. With much back and forth, and after the promised meeting, Louisa finally agreed that Patrick could see me whether or not she had a date, and we would make sure that she got plenty of advance notice, that he got home on time, and that she got lots of support from both of us. As we worked through this, Louisa and I got closer and closer. I particularly remember one night when we were worried about Patrick and sat up late talking about him while he slept in the next room. Louisa and I became best friends and went into business together, putting on workshops and theater presentations. We all three traveled together and had a wonderful time. Patrick and I wound up growing apart as lovers, but the friendship between Louisa and me carried on. Should you meet the third party? We vote yes. If you don't, you'll almost certainly wind up imagining someone cuter, sexier, more predatory, and more threatening than anyone could be outside a Hollywood erotic thriller. Besides, who knows? You might wind up liking him or her. Do your best to fall in like. If you take against one of your partner's lovers, things can get very messy, and happy balances can get hard to find. We sometimes regard lovers whom we do not instantly adore the way we do in-laws. We may not exactly love our brother's wife or our mother's new husband, but we recognize that this person has joined our family and has rights and feelings just like everybody else. So we find ways to be cordial at the various gatherings that we all attend. Some of our best friends are people we met because someone we were fucking was fucking them, too. You may even find yourself considering forming a liaison with this person yourself. We talked to one woman whose first experience with open relationships took place when her girlfriend was sleeping with another woman, and our friend wound up falling in love with the other woman. My girlfriend got kind of cranky about this, she remembers wryly. We're all tight family now, but it took a decade to get here. We suggest a few moments of soul-searching to make sure your motivation is loving or lustful, rather than vengeful or competitive. Then, if you test clean, go for it. It's really not too surprising that you like the same people your partner likes. And mutual attractions like these can form the nucleus of a long-lasting and very rewarding little tribe. On the other hand, we sometimes see sluts who feel that they have to be sexual with their lovers' lovers. In some cases, both parties in a partnership have an agreement to play with a third party only together. Such agreements require that both partners have veto power over potential thirds. Being sexy with someone you find unattractive or unpleasant is a very bad idea for you and for them. On the other hand, basic slut ethics should not allow you to abuse this power to prevent your partner from having sex with anyone at all by vetoing everybody. A strategy that may seem tempting, because until you unlearn jealousy, all outside engagements can look very threatening. Sometimes you need to gather up your strength, face down your fears, and unlearn by doing. You may simply feel that since your partner likes and lusts after this person so much, you should too. To assuage your partner's guilt or to satisfy some obscure sense of fairness, please don't. If you simply don't feel hot for your squeeze's squeeze, don't let yourself be driven into a position where you feel you have to fuck out of politeness. There are many other excellent ways for people to relate to one another. Cook a nice dinner, go to the movies together, play cards together, or find some other way to help this person feel accepted into your life. Which brings up an important question. How much responsibility do you have for helping your lover's lovers feel secure and welcome? We've both spent many long telephone conversations reassuring our lovers' lovers that, yes, it's really okay, and have a great time, honey. We think that your own needs should be of primary importance to you, and if you really just can't be welcoming and supportive, then simple civility can suffice. On the other hand, we also think it's gracious to be as friendly as you can without having to grit your teeth and force a smile. At minimum, we suggest that you try to provide some reassurance that this is not a competition, that you are not being harmed by anything that's going on, and that you are able to take care of your own emotions. In other words, a promise to own your own stuff and not blame the third party. After all, such people come into your life because you share something very important, the belief that your partner is the hottest thing on legs. They presumably have better things to do with their time and energy than sitting around plotting how to destroy your happiness. Some couples take meeting and interviewing prospective partners very seriously, and we suggest this strategy when your model of polyamory requires that you include any new partner in your family. People with children, for instance, care a lot about who comes home to the house and could wind up as an uncle or an auntie to your kids. Some poly people will not consummate sex with a lover until all these issues have been dealt with, and those are fine decisions to make if they fit your lifestyle. Long engagements can be a very good idea. After the crush is over, some people will find a long-term place in your life, often unexpected, like the lover who has become your kid's favorite uncle or your partner's business partner. Others may leave, and when they leave with warm feelings, they may come back again in the future when once again there is a place for them in your life or for you in theirs. Thus, the infinitely connected polyamorous slut builds his web of extended families and tribes. Two of our favorite sluts have been together nearly 20 years, loving each other and a lot of other wonderful people. One year, for Tina's birthday, Trace bought her what we think is the ultimate birthday present, 3 season tickets to an excellent performance series, 1 for Tina, 1 for Trace, and 1 for whichever of Tina's lovers she chose to invite to each event. Dasi got to see Ravi Shankar. Primary and primary and... dot, dot, dot. Some very capable sluts maintain more than one primary relationship. Dasi has known one such couple, Robert and Celia, for almost 4 decades. They together raised 2 children from previous relationships and subsequently some grandchildren. Each has another primary partner, both usually women, and family relationships with all their exes. Robert's outside partner, May, was originally lover to Celia's lover, Judy, back in 1985, then became lovers with Celia and finally with Robert from 1988 to the present, and they intend on into the future. Some years ago, Miranda and Celia lived upstairs and Robert and May lived downstairs. Currently, Cheryl, another of Celia's previous girlfriends, lives upstairs and helps with the grandchildren. Miranda, another of Celia's exes, visits 2 days a week since she lives out of town but attends school nearby. Are you dizzy yet? All of these people, plus many other friends and lovers of various degrees of intimacy, both present and historical, and most of their friends and lovers, form a very long-term extended family that has lived, loved, and raised children together for nearly 40 years, and plans to care for one another in their old age. We are impressed. Chapter 19, The Single Slut. To live single is unusual in most cultures. Most people look on their periods of singlehood as temporary, often accidental, and to be ended as quickly as possible. You are recovering from your last relationship, mourning a breakup, or too busy working on a career to handle hunting for romance. Perhaps there aren't any good candidates around right now. Something better will surely come along soon, so you wait, not even thinking of making a lifestyle out of how you are living today. Your authors hasten to assure you that there are more positive approaches to the lifestyle of the single slut. What would it be like to be intentionally single? To choose for some period of time to live by yourself. Potential partners can pop up when you least expect them. And in a culture that is built in twos, any relationship that has any life in it is generally regarded as an express train to couplehood. How then to stay single? What would your social support network look like? Would everybody regard you as an outlaw? Might it be possible to get your needs met and feel loved and secure through a community of friends, lovers, families, mentors, your personal human resources? Building your network by yourself can be hard at first. No one but you to make the phone calls, schedule dates for lunch or the movies, make sure to stay connected. It's up to you to build yourself a family. And it's up to you to take care of yourself gently and with an open heart. Your relationship with yourself is a lifelong commitment. When you are single, you have unique opportunities to live out that relationship with yourself, to find out who you are, and to celebrate your journey in whatever relationships you may move through as you travel through your life. To live single and in love with many is a voyage of self-discovery, an opportunity to get to know yourself intimately and to work on any changes you want to make in your life. Dossie was single when she first struggled with her jealousy, and having it all to herself made it easier to see inside herself rather than blame someone else, and to make conscious decisions about how she wanted to deal with her feelings. We are not here to advocate being single over being partnered. This is not an either-or choice. But our culture tends to discount singlehood as a lifestyle, and thus very few people choose to remain single, which means there are relatively few resources and little social status available to the single person. Perhaps if being single were an acceptable, even valued lifestyle, partnerships might develop more out of choice and less out of a sense of necessity or a desperate grab for salvation. Partnered people get to share the basics of their lives, working together on shared goals, pooling finances, splitting the hard work of child-rearing. Partners also get to share with each other when things are less than pretty. And we all need somebody to let us know that we are still lovable when we are not at our shiniest. The challenge for the single slut is to find ways to deepen the intimacy in relationships that may not be life partnerships. Being single, on the other hand, offers the opportunity to spend time being purely who you are. Singles enjoy more freedom to explore, fewer obligations, and the ability to lounge around the house in a holy t-shirt playing video games with nobody the wiser. Perhaps you are single for negative and valid reasons. The last relationship was a disaster and you are terrified to try again. You only feel safe controlling your own finances, or your own kitchen, or your own life. The only way you know how to be in a relationship is to try to be the perfect wife, or husband, or lover, or provider, and you're exhausted from trying to be someone you are not. You are recovering from a breakup. You want to avoid rebound romance. You need time to grieve. You just haven't found anyone that you really want to live with. Perhaps you are actively choosing to live single at this time in your life. Living alone, you're free to explore any kind of relationship that crosses your path. You can love someone who wouldn't make a good partner. You can love someone who already has a partner and who doesn't need you to help with the mortgage or take the kids to the orthodontist. You might choose singlehood because you love the joy of the hunt, the magic of flirtation, all the mystery and excitement of newness. Or you might be choosing to develop sexual connections with your friends or without possessiveness or any other relationship that is possible without coupling. Each utterly unique person you meet offers a new mirror in which you can see a new view of yourself. Each new lover increases your knowledge of the world and your self-knowledge as well. Some thoughts about love. As our relationships blossom all over the rainbow of possibility, each one may inspire different feelings of love. When we learn to recognize and welcome love as we find it in our hearts in all of its many and marvelous manifestations, sexual love, familial love, friendly love, passionate love, gentle love, overwhelming love, caretaking love, and millions of others, we discover a river of rich and nourishing love that can flow through our lives in a constantly replenishing stream. The way to feel solid enough to swim in that ever-changing river is to learn to love yourself. Some people believe that to love yourself is selfish in a negative way, and that to spend some part of your life focusing on yourself is not only selfish but also narcissistic. How do you draw a line between healthy self-esteem and pathological narcissism? How much self are you allowed to have? Practice self-nurturing, not only to get you through hard times, but to guide you into a loving relationship with yourself. When you follow through with a simple act like comforting yourself with homemade soup, bringing home a fragrant flower for your night table, or taking a sweet solitary walk in a beautiful place, then you get an experience of being kind to yourself that can answer all those questions about, what do they mean, love myself? This question is more easily answered by doing than by thinking. If you have a hard time feeling valuable when no one is around to tell you that you are, why not do something that is valuable to others? Many unhappy sluts with no date this weekend have gone off to serve dinner to the homeless at a local church and come back filled to the brim with good feeling about all the pleasure they were able to give to others. Once you have a handle on loving yourself, you can practice sharing that love with others. You've probably been taught to reserve the language of love for when you're feeling overwhelmingly tender and passionate, and only for those who have made huge commitments to you. We recommend instead learning to recognize and acknowledge all the sweet feelings that make life worthwhile, even when they don't knock you over. And moreover, learning to communicate those feelings to the people who inspire them.
Exercise. Words of love. 1. Write one or more letters you're not going to send to one or more of your lovers, telling them how you feel about them, what you love about them, how much you love them. 2. Free write for 10 minutes. What's embarrassing about telling people you love them? You can decide later if you want to share any part of what you've written with anyone you love.
Ethics for the single slut. What are the rights and responsibilities of the single sexual partner? Start with rights. You have them, and you will need to assert them. Too often our culture sees the single partner as secondary, outside, an affair, a home wrecker, and your place in the ecology of any life or relationship or community is dismissed as inconsequential at best. What does a single person have to do to get taken seriously in this community or any other? If you're in this position, a good place to start thinking about rights and responsibilities would be with some respect, honor, and consideration for each person's feelings, including your own. The rights of the single slut. You have the right to be treated with respect. You are not half a person just because you are single. You have the right to have your feelings heard and respected and responded to. You have the right to ask for anything you want. The person you ask may not have to give it to you, but you are definitely allowed to ask. You have the right to have dates and plans honored, not changed by a third party simply because that person has seniority. You have the right to chicken soup when you are sick and whatever other emergency support you may need, rides to the emergency room, help when your car breaks down. Your lovers are your friends, and friends help each other when things go wrong. You have the right to negotiate family holidays like Thanksgiving and weekends involving your own and your lover's children. You are a member of any family you are in relationship with. How this works may look different depending on the values of the family you're connecting to, but you definitely have the right to ask for more than just being somebody's dirty little secret. You have the rights to have limits and to set limits. What you will and will not do, what is and is not negotiable, for your emotional well-being and personal ecology. You have the right not to be blamed for problems in other people's relationships. You have the right to refuse to be a dumping ground for someone's marital woes. You may not want to listen to how much your lover wants a divorce, and you shouldn't have to. You have the right to count. Everybody counts, including you. You have the right to be valued and welcomed and respected as the wonderful human being that you are. The responsibilities of the single slut. You are responsible for developing and maintaining good, solid boundaries. Boundaries are, quite simply, how you can tell where you end and the next guy begins. Good boundaries are strong, clear, and flexible. Bad boundaries are weak, foggy, and brittle. You are responsible for making clear agreements. Make and keep agreements about time, about public and private behavior, and about courtesies in shared spaces. Always do what you say you are going to do. You are responsible for being clear when what you want to say is no. Don't waffle, and don't make promises you can't or won't keep. You are responsible for carefully choosing who you confide in about your relationships. Gossip can be a destructive force, and yet most of us need to be able to talk out our stuff with someone. Be clear about who those people are. You are responsible for respecting the other relationships of your lovers, especially their life partners, and for treating these people with respect, empathy, and open-heartedness. You are responsible for safer sex, opening discussion with potential partners, making your own decisions about your level of acceptable risk, respecting other people's decisions, and learning to be adept with barriers and little bits of essential rubber. You are responsible for owning your feelings, as is everyone else. Learn to handle your own crises and get support when you need it from others who are free to be there for you at that particular time. You are responsible for being straightforward about your intentions. When you practice being openly affectionate with your lovers, they may expect more from you than you are offering, and you must be willing to speak out and make yourself and your desires clear to all concerned. You are responsible for finding ways to say what another person might not want to hear. Single sluts may need to state uncomfortable truths in relationships that might not have the customary intimacy for such vulnerable discussions. You are responsible for promoting intimacy in all your relationships. If being single means that you are committed to being coolly invulnerable in all situations, you'll be living in a cold and distant world. You must value and welcome all of your lovers as the wonderful, brilliant, unique human beings that they surely are. Rainbow of Connections. If you're single and slutty, you may find yourself interacting with a lot of different people in a lot of different patterns. Here are a few that we've encountered and that you may too. Singles with singles. Isn't it funny how we call single people available? Available for what? When you are single, your lovers might be other singles, but that doesn't mean that each of those relationships is anything like any other. With one person, you may love to go dancing. With another, it's hiking. With any individual, you might be dating frequently, regularly, irregularly, or rarely. That rare time might be a very special thing. Quantity doesn't always equal quality. When everyone is single and no one is auditioning for partners, then each relationship is free to seek its own level, and there may be fewer obstacles to flowing into exactly the relationship that fits for the two of you. Just because you are single and not planning on changing that right now, please don't take your lovers for granted. Let them know how precious and valuable they are to you. Convention says we should be more reserved. We say let's change that convention. We love hot dates, and we also love warmth. Partner to a partner. You may be dating someone who has a long-term life-sharing partner, married or living together. When you are dating that person, there is someone else whose feelings must be taken into account. Perhaps you find yourself in the position of sleeping with someone who's cheating. Whatever you think about the ethics involved, different sluts make different choices on this one. It is certain that difficulties can arise when your lover's partner doesn't know about your connection. Contortions may be required to keep the partner from finding out. And even with all the cleverness and forethought in the world, there is no sure way to keep such a big secret forever. This kind of secrecy imposes pretty severe limits. If the relationship consists of weekly trysts at the no-tell motel, how much connection can really take place? If the relationship goes well, someone may very well wind up wanting more. It's the outside lover in a secret affair who will most likely get abandoned if anybody gets caught. Perhaps your sweetie is in a don't-ask-don't-tell agreement. Many couples new to non-monogamy try this one in an attempt to feel safer. In our experience, this can create problems for all concerned. First, most people find their lovers in their social networks, so keeping them all separate can be difficult or impossible. Or lies must be told to protect the agreement. And then it's back to the cheating paradigm we just discussed. Maintaining untruths, even when you're asked to do so, will create distance in any relationship and is particularly damaging to live-in partnerships where secrets are a lot harder to keep. On the other hand, when everybody involved is informed about your involvement, things are often easier. Even if things start out uneasy, being out of the closet offers the possibility of working toward learning to be more comfortable for everyone involved. If your lover is part of an experienced poly couple, both of them will know their boundaries and be able to let you know what their limits are, which can make for a lot more clarity. If they're new to this kind of relating, good faith and a willingness to talk through problems can get you through most, if not all, difficulties. Your authors have found that we are happiest when everybody knows and acknowledges everybody. Common courtesy is essential, as is scrupulous avoidance of anything that smacks of competition or one-upmanship. Catfights are only fun in porn. Both of us much prefer to meet our partner's partners and make friends with them when at all possible. Sometimes they are not entirely sure that they want to be friends with us, and occasionally they're pretty sure they'd rather not. But with patience and goodwill, most of them come around. After all, we have at least one thing in common. We both love the same person. There is no reason why our interests need to be opposed to our lover's partner's interests. We all want to collaborate on creating a happy outcome where everybody gets respected and everybody gets their needs met and their desires fulfilled. In the long run, we are all on the same side. The experienced slut can take some initiative in reaching out to frightened partners in a gentle and open-hearted way. Some of our best friends over the years were first met in these circumstances. The vulnerability of feeling jealous or nervous about each other is its own form of intimacy, and friendly feelings may be the most useful response. Taking care of a partner's partner by sharing sex with them is optional for both of you. It's rarely a good idea to get intimate with someone just because they might feel left out. And it is not often sustainable to enter into a relationship that doesn't interest you in and of itself. Occasionally, you will discover a sweet fit and become lover to a couple, as we will discuss soon. But avoid committing yourself to an interaction that you don't like very much or don't want at all. Giving in to someone to assuage jealousy just about never makes the jealousy go away. You can respect your own limits while offering support, warmth, and welcome to your lover's lover. A special case. You may find yourself in a relationship with someone whose life partnership is no longer very sexual. Whether from the normal cooling of passion as relationships mature, or through illness or disability. When you are dating such a person, do remember to approach their partner with an added measure of care and respect. Such people may be happy that you are keeping their partner happy, but still somewhat sorrowful at not being able to fulfill that role themselves. It helps to discover what valuable contributions that person does make and recognize and honor them. Role-constrained relationship. Sometimes your relationship may be defined by the roles you play together, roles that a person's life partner may not want or enjoy. Your connection could be as simple as a love of watching football on TV or, perhaps more complicated, being the same-sex partner to someone in an opposite-sex marriage. Your shared roles might be about SM power exchange, erotic role-playing, exploration of gender, spiritual journeying, or any other sexual sharing that the partnership doesn't provide. Your shared role makes you part of a family's ecology, part of what makes it run smoothly, and is both a joy and a responsibility not to be taken lightly. Lover to a couple. Sometimes sexual connection comes together quite beautifully between multiple people, a threesome, a quad, or a whatever. The very riskiness is exhilarating, and the adventure can be very new and exciting. If you are fortunate enough to have this experience, you can expect to honor the relationship that you are privileged to share in and to be honored as a very special member of that relationship. The sex can be very luxurious. Think of all that can be done with those extra pairs of hands and feature various configurations of 2-on-1. How delicious to have two people.